and give and take. And I don't really think balance is the right word. It's an ebb and flow. It's going, you know, into the water and figuring out which way the current's going, and being open to doing that and experiencing all the twists and turns and those bends that Debbie mentions, and going with the flow. That doesn't mean I don't kick and scream about it sometimes. Yeah, sometimes I want to go up current, you know, up river. And thankfully I'm a swimmer and I can.
That was Alyssa Mages on this week's episode of the People of Veterinary Medicine podcast. The People of Veterinary Medicine, powered by Luca Veterinary Data Security. Greetings, DVMs, practice managers, vet techs, support staff, veterinary consultants, and podcast enthusiasts. Welcome or welcome back. In this week's episode, we are talking with Alyssa Mages, who has a very similar career path to mine in that she's tried a whole bunch of different things, has been willing to pivot, and truly just has an amazing story. And really, I felt like towards the end of this conversation, I was really just kind of getting to know Alyssa, and I really wanted to be honest, I really kind of want to talk to her even more, but for the sake of brevity and time, we had to cut it off. But truly a fascinating person. And again, this episode for me really brought it back to an understanding of my own insecurities and my own problems when I think about dealing with the complex nature of the human problem. And it was really fascinating to talk with her about that, especially as we talk about some topics where we got into like the religion and theology topic a little bit, and we definitely have different opinions, but that's okay, right? And I think where we kind of were coming back to is this idea that, you know, we're all good people, and somebody else may have a bad idea, but we're not bad people with bad ideas. And I hope that this podcast is, you know, as we explore this small community of vet med, we can set the standard with conversations like this, where we're allowed to be a part of a community, be friends, be neighbors with differing opinions, but still be a community, and open the door to these these tough conversations, and the civility that can happen in these kind of conversations without offending people, you know, right? It's not about offending somebody. It's about just maybe challenging ideas or topics. But it really was a great conversation, and I really think you're really going to like Alyssa and what she's trying to do with Empowering Veterinary Teams and her new venture that she started this year. And there's just so many similarities in our lives and kind of where we have ended up and how we've gotten there. It was really fascinating to talk with her. So with that being said, sit back, relax, and enjoy the episode. But first, this episode is brought to you by Luca Veterinary Data Security, where our mission is to help veterinary practice owners everywhere realize the value of their data and help them take the necessary steps to protect it. So if you need help protect data in your practice, the first thing you can do is go to luca.vet and download our 5 Simple Steps to Protect Your Practice ebook, which is free. So again, go to www.luca.vet and look for our 5 Simple Steps to Start Protecting Your Practice.
I want to get outside and do stuff, and it's kind of limiting when it's like freezing cold rain, and so.
Yeah, it makes it hard to do that when it's just wet out, right?
Yeah, I mean, they still go out. My daughter still runs and things like that, but it's just not as much fun as if there was, you know, snow to build forts and pelt us with. So
there you go. Awesome.
Yeah.
All right. So thank you for joining me today. I always like to start with one question, and then we kind of just see where it goes from there.
Love it.
And so if you can kind of tell me, you know, how did you get into the vet space, and how did you get where you're at?
How did I get where I'm at? That's a loaded question, Clint. So it's never for any part of my life, actually. My story is not that, hey, take that straight route, you know, you're going to get there quicker. I've always done the circuitous method. Maybe because I've lived in Pennsylvania my whole life and there's no straight road anywhere. It's very curvy here. So, you know, you have to go 10 miles. It will take you 45 minutes. That's just how it is. So I actually started off in marine biology. That was my, you know, first goal as a little kid all the way up to college. and realized as I was working in the Florida Keys that this is amazing and wonderful, but I'm not making as much of an impact. And I want to not only learn about these amazing marine creatures, I want to help them. You know, I did some volunteer work with sharks and sea turtles and pilot whales. I was like, yes, okay, how can I help with their life and their well-being? So a swim coach friend of mine was like, well, what are you going to do with your life then? Like, oh, thanks. You know, let's make that subtle. So I started volunteering at our local veterinary hospital. You know, did the cleaning out the kennels and walking the dogs and sticking my nose everywhere that I could to learn and see and do as much as I could. And when my now husband was moving out to Vancouver for grad school, I said, well, I'm going because it's Vancouver. And I actually have family out there. So it was kind of fortuitous and got more into the vet sector. So did work at an island mixed practice with everything from cats and dogs to sheep, goats, loons, and seal pups. And then moved onto the mainland, and I worked at a referral center and fell in love with surgery. Was absolutely head over heels wanting to be a veterinary surgeon, and that was the plan. Got in to vet school, and here we go. Just kidding. You're going to be a mom. So I could have absolutely done both. There's many incredible women out there that have, but my mentor at the time encouraged me to choose family first because I wasn't done with veterinary medicine. It wasn't done with me, and I could come back to it at any point, but you only get one first shot at this motherhood thing. So give that a go. And I'm really glad I listened because I wouldn't be here talking with you today, Clint. So it shifted me out of the vet school tract and into veterinary nursing. So we moved back to the States and I kept going with an emergency practice there and started at Manor College. That's within the next 6 months to get my veterinary nursing degree. So graduated in 2012 and passed the boards and am a CVT since 2012 and have been ever since. And then I've worked through different sectors of vet med, large animal, field medicine, lab animal, exotics. But my, you know, first and foremost love is emergency medicine and anesthesia. My most recent position before I left active practice this past June was as an education development coordinator. I had worked at Manor in an adjunct professor position a few years back and realized that teaching is absolutely another love of mine too. So this position enabled me to do nursing work as well as teaching, and it was amazing. And then I realized I was only helping a small amount of people and I wanted to do more. If there's a theme here, it's I always want to do more and help more and just be present and be a part of a bigger positive impact for change. So EVT kind of came into being with my best friend Caitlin and I in the fall of 2019, where we were trying to figure out how we could do this whole work-life balance thing. Still haven't figured that out, but we're better at it. And we wanted to be able to be a present in our families' lives as well as an impact on a more global scale. And how can we identify existing leaders within veterinary teams and grow them and empower them to be more of who they are and thereby growing their practices in the industry as a whole. So as of June of this past year, 2020, I left practice and started full-time in EVT, and it's gone uphill ever since. So, whew, sorry, I talked a long time.
No, that's the point. So what is, for people that don't know, what does EVT stand for?
Oh, sure. Sorry about that. It is empowering veterinary teams. And really what we were looking at is kind of what I alluded to, identifying the existing leaders within a veterinary practice. And there's two other tracks that we work along as well, not just within the veterinary practice, doing webinars and wet labs and creating training programs and evaluations and things of that regard, but also in the education realm with vet tech programs, vet schools and things like that, making training models and mannequins that they can take home and work on so they can up their skills game outside of school time, and it's affordable. And then in the industrial sector, we do content development to make those CEs and webinars and lunch and learns with the labs and sales reps that come in, something that people actually want to attend. It makes it more didactic, more dynamic, and relatable, just because we've all had to evolve this past year, and veterinary medicine is no exception. So that's where we empower to do all of those things. And our motto is to inspire, instruct, and impact together. So we can't do this on our own. We need everyone to work together. And that's what we want that underlying theme to be throughout.
So you said something there as you were kind of telling your story that is a pretty powerful statement. So I'd love for you to kind of elaborate on it a little bit. And you said you only get one shot at motherhood. What was that? What was that like? I mean, what is that? I don't know. Elaborate on that. I mean, I don't know what the right question is, but you know, what does that mean to you? Yeah, kind of
Yeah,
elaborate a
for
little bit.
sure. Well, like any big endeavor that you set out on, you do only, and like meeting you or anyone in your professional life, you get that one chance at a first impression, right? You just get that one shot. So don't mess it up, right? but that's not what I meant there, because I definitely, as a mom, make mistakes every day. It's that one job where you get to do that and come back to work the next day. But it was something that my mentor told me at the time. She's like, you put 150% into everything that you do, and this time do it for you and your family because you've been doing it for everyone else. Enjoy this, you know, take this moment and find this part of you and have that relationship that will last forever because jobs come and go, and friendships hopefully last longer than that. But this one relationship that you have with your children, you only get that one time with them and make the most of it. And that's what I wanted to do. And then, you know, other positions as a vet tech, as a vet nurse, the schedules, you know, the swing shifts and things, it made it really challenging. So I went all in for birthdays, you know, like the cakes and the things and making sure I did the costumes and whatnot. Actually, that's not true. My mom sewed those. I just embellished. but to really to put that passion that I had for veterinary medicine into my family for as much as I could. Unfortunately, living in Canada when she was born, you get to because they say, hey, here's half your salary and a little bit more and stay home and be a mom. Great. I will. I don't know what I'm doing. So there was a lot of support groups, and that's my mentor again was there for that. And some other, it takes a village. And it was really something that I've kind of stuck to. When something's important to me, you'll know it because I'm going to invest all that I am and all that I do into you or that project.
So you also have mentioned this person who's a mentor in your life,
Yeah.
you know, a few times. So what is that relationship like? How did that come about?
She was one of the head surgeons at the practice I was at. Her name's Terry Schiller, and she is now the head of the surgical department at the University of Calgary. So we are, I mean, we don't talk every day anymore. We work together like elbows deep in animals and things like that for a long time. And she's just a force to be reckoned with, you know. It was that person that a lot of people were scared of because she was really intense and super intelligent and driven. And I just like moth to a flame. I was like, yes, I want to grow up and be like this incredible person. And you know, she took me under her wing. She really did, and instilled in me that sense of perseverance and commitment and integrity. And I've just carried her with me. She was one of the first ones that made a huge impact, but she wasn't the last. I've definitely had the privilege of working with some really incredible humans over the and animals, of course. But Terry was the one that was like, this is your path, except until it isn't, and be okay with that. And that takes a lot to say because you know she's lived it, and then to hear it and embody that was really powerful. So that was her. She's an amazing human being. So I would hope anyone could get to work with her.
Yeah. You know, you said something there that reminded me of something, an interview that actually, as of coming out, that just came out last week with Dr. H. Howells. And she was talking about this idea, this concept that if you're going to work in vet med, it doesn't necessarily have to be your calling. And how do you navigate that if it's not your calling? And how are you okay with treating it as a job and being good at your job and being excited about your work, but not necessarily feeling like it has to be
The end
your
all be
purpose
all.
in life. Yeah. And so
Yeah.
you said something there that was like, you know, she said to you, you know, this is kind of your calling until it isn't. So, you know, having kind of done a number of different things, how do you make that pivot? How do you make that, or as Debbie Boone would say, how do you take that bend in the road?
Yes. I love Debbie. Actually, it's fun. It's really being meeting all of you, like us like-minded people. It's amazing how our paths diverge, but it's a really good point, and it's not an easy one. You know, a lot of people are like, this is who I'm meant to be, and I have a calling. And you know, my dad said that about his profession, and he was a minister, ironically enough, and for 45 years. And I always question that, because to me, there's other things that are as meaningful, if not more so, and should be, than something that you get up and do every day. So I refer to what I've done throughout my career, I guess. Anything that I'm passionate about is what I'm doing, and I'm present in that moment, and I fulfill it till it reaches its zenith. And then it's like, okay, do I keep going? Is there a way to keep this sustainable? Does it need to be? Or is there something else that I can see myself doing, that there's a niche that needs to be filled that also needs me? Okay. And honestly, that pivotal point was when I became a mom, and I keep going back to that, but it was a really changing point in my life, my pivot point, my first big one, because I was going to vet school. I was going to be a doctor. That's it. You know, that's got to be what it is. It's not. And how do you become okay with that when everything that you've been pushing towards and dreaming for is all of a sudden you've taken it off the table? You figure out what needs to happen and how you can make that go. So it's really just analyzing what you've got around you, who's with you, and how you can make it happen and keep that energy going. And sometimes you have to take a pause. You have to hit the reset button and say, yep, okay, I need to figure this out. And my husband, Paul's great for that. He's like, your dream didn't die. It changed. It's like, if you're on a hike and there's a tree falling across the path that you're going on, you're not going to stop the hike. You're just going to reroute and go around it. So that's kind of been my personal calling, is to go with what I'm passionate about, make that difference while I can, where I'm at. And then if circumstances change, there's an addition to the family, there's a move, there's something, it's like, okay, how can I still do what I love, be happy to wake up in the morning, and to make that demarcation between work and life? Because it shouldn't be all encompassing either way. You'd have to have some balance and give and take. And I don't really think balance is the right word. It's an ebb and flow. It's going, you know, into the water and figuring out which way the current's going, and being open to doing that and experiencing all the twists and turns and those bends that Debbie mentions, and going with the flow. That doesn't mean I don't kick and scream about it sometimes. Yeah, sometimes I want to go up current, you know, up river. And thankfully, I'm a swimmer and I can. Clint, did I lose you?
Yeah, it totally was me. My computer, my internet decided to drop there. And yeah, the so even people in technology are not immune to the woes of technology.
So, yeah. Honestly, that makes me feel so much better when my computer has a hissy fit. Troubleshooting it before I got on with you this morning. Like, please just behave.
Yeah, no, we all can't escape it, you know. I guess that's the reason I have a job, right? And I guess that's the reason I have a business, because it even
there
happens.
You go. So did we miss that whole last segment?
Yeah, so I did. Yeah. Okay. So sorry everybody for the interruption in the episode here, but
we're keeping it real. We're going with it.
That's right. So to kind of recap, you had talked about this concept of something being your calling until it's not. Mm-hmm. And, you know, how do you kind of determine when you hit that fork, or as Debbie says, you know, that bend in the road, and how do you take that path?
Absolutely. So I love that phrase, and I hate it, of a calling. You know, I grew up with that in our family. My dad's job was his calling. He was meant to do it. And my grandmother was so proud of him, and he was a United Methodist minister, and that's a whole other conversation. But I always would question him about that. I said, but what else is? You know, it can't just be one thing, that this is what you're meant to do, that you're not defined by what you do. Who are you? Right? So for me, it's been, all right, I'm going to be a marine biologist. Did that. What's next? You know, so pivot point was that first one into vet med. And I just figured out, and there's, okay, how can I combine these two things? And then next pivot point was, oh, vet school. Yes, that's what I'm going to be, a doctor. Absolutely. Just kidding. You made a different decision. Now what? Okay, I still want to do this. How can I make that happen? Vet nurse. Perfect. All right, how do I figure this out? And I would hit these crossroads, in a sense, and you can either stop or go with the flow. And for me, my type of mentality, I'm just a go, 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 go. That's who I am. I have two speeds, on or off. as many people, and you're going to get to know me a little bit here. It's just, I keep going. So it was, stopping wasn't an option. I just had to refocus and rediscover what was going to keep me going. A calling. I'm really passionate about whatever it is that I'm doing. I will give 100% and more of myself if I can, but I also am very much conscious of, I need my own space. And my dear friends are always like, Liz, you're in your cocoon. Come on out now. Right. Sorry. I just needed some time. So I know that there is a very important role for separation of work and life. It's not a balance. It can't be. It's a give and a take. It's an ebb and a flow. It's like any relationship. Is it ever someone doing half of the work, quote unquote, all the time? No. You know, for a while after I had knee surgery, my husband and the kids were doing way more than I could. And then when I was back on my feet and other things were happening, I did more. So it's really, and I look at what I've done throughout my career path as that kind of relationship. It's like, all right, I'm going to give it here. Just kidding. I'm going to sit back and take a minute and go over here. And I hit that bend in the river, and thank goodness I'm a swimmer. I can go up current if I need to, but I don't want to. You get really tired when you fight against where it's you need to go. And so I've also, with a lot of help from my village and some other lovely medical professionals, always will advocate for mental wellness. It really took some time and me kicking and screaming to just go with the flow and realize that your dreams don't die. They shift. And that really came into clear focus, pun intended, when I was in photography and then in radiology classes. Because if you take a picture from one angle, say this is a tooth, you only see two roots. But if you turn it, there's three. So I've used that analogy so much in my personal and professional life, is if you only are focused on one route, one angle, you're going to miss everything else that's there. So take that as an opportunity. That doesn't mean it's not terrifying. Oh my gosh, you know, to step into this position, this role, and leave what I've done for more than a decade behind was really scary. But I knew what was out there, and the potential was much more invigorating than the paralyzing fear. So I leapt. So leap and swim and work, and then take a minute and float for a minute, and then get back up and do it again. Shake some water off, and you're going to be okay.
Yeah. So, you know, as somebody who's done a lot of different things in my life, you know, was in a rock band, touring rock band. And
that's awesome.
I shouldn't even say rock band. It was like a punk rock band. And then I was in like this metal band. And
I get cooler every time I talk to you.
Yeah, hold on. I don't know about that. But I was really heavy into endurance sports, and I was, and actually, I had no interest in technology, but I was working at a sports supplement company, and I was like the promotions manager. So it was like with bodybuilders and stuff. And I was really fascinated by like the whole fitness industry. And still to this day, I will say that bodybuilding is the hardest sport in the world because it's a 24-hour job. I mean, this is a complete tangent, but I think it's really fascinating. I mean, the dedication to be able to get up at 1 o'clock in the morning and eat bland chicken and rice because you have to eat, you know, 7 days a week is crazy. But anyway, so, and then from there, I had essentially, I don't know, maybe people don't know this, maybe it's interesting, but from there, I actually had a guy that was kind of like our in-house developer. And so he was working a lot with the data, you know, our SAP database. And I was decently good at technology. I was building my own computers at the time. And he kind of took me under his wing, and I was like, all right, I'm going to change my, I was still going to school at the time. And so I changed my major to get a bachelor's degree in information technology. And then I graduated there and I went to law school. I mean, so my path has been anything but straight, you know, and I think it's really interesting. Way, yeah. But what has always been interesting is I always meet people who, like the opposite of us, right? Who have from the very beginning dedicated their lives to a specific craft, right? And have really honed in on it and been really good at it. And in some regards, I've almost kind of had this like little bit of guilt. I'm like, well, what if I really had dedicated myself to one specific thing? How good could I be now? You know, because I always get this this response when people ask me about the things that I've done, or maybe I'll talk about something. I always get this response of like, oh man, that's amazing. Like, what haven't you done? And I'm like, part of me is like, ah, is that kind of a dig? You know, like I'm a jack of all trades, but a master of none. And is that kind of a negative thing? So maybe as like my own personal therapy session, how is it that you've like really embraced this concept of really moving and changing paths, as opposed to being, again, like back to the idea of being like, say, the world's best veterinary surgeon,
right?
You've kind of embraced all these other
paths. And thank you for asking that. It's a good question. And there's some days I'm not okay with it. You know, if I had stuck with it and said, the heck with this, I'm going to follow that path. And maybe I would have been that great surgeon that I thought I wanted to be. And that was, you know, I had those plans and those dreams of like, all right, we're going to get through college. We're going to do marine biology. We're going to get our doctorate. We're going to do this. We're going to do this. And, you know, life isn't like that all the time though, is it? You know, the only constant in life is change. So I chose to look at it as all these things that I was experiencing and doing and going and being, well, I'm dynamic, just like everything in this world is, and I can adapt. You know, I've moved, I can't even tell you how many times as a kid and as an adult, probably close to 24 at this point. And it's not a reinvention of yourself, but it's a reconfiguration. You know, I can decorate an apartment in 3 hours, done, unpacked, decorated, things on the walls, everything ready to go, because I know that it could be temporary. I don't know how long I'm going to be anywhere doing one thing, but I'm going to make it as real and authentic and home for as long as I have it. So I think what I've done, it has a commonality through it. There's been a science kind of theme and animals kind of throughout it, but it's been different. Whereas you have experienced so much. How amazing is that? How many people can you have conversations with that you can relate to, that you can actually say, I understand, and you do? You know, that is such a gift, because you have sat in that chair, you have walked in those shoes, you have heard that music, you have written that essay, you know, you've actually done it. So when you're sitting across the table from someone that's struggling, you can speak to that authentically, honestly, like, yeah, I get it. And that is a gift. Because just like those people that have done their one tract for, you know, since school up into their professional career, one of my best friends is that, you know, she high school, college, vet school, boarded, boom. And she is, you know, in her early 30s and out there doing it, you know, whoa. Yeah, a little bit of like a little twinge there, like, oh, could I have done that? Maybe, but it wasn't meant for me. You know, that was her path. And that's not mine. So she can speak to that, to other people that have done that. But I can speak to those little girls and little guys that saw a whale and were like, I want to swim with them. Like, yes, you should totally do it. And if you've traveled and eaten fresh curry and picked tea on the hills of China, yeah, I can speak to that. I've done that. And hey, I haven't figured out what I'm doing with my life yet. Yeah, me either. It's okay. I'll be 40 next year. There, I said it out loud. But in my head, I'm still 26, so it's fine. So I would choose, and that's, again, this didn't come easily, and I didn't come to this conclusion and this ease of living on my own. There was a lot of conversations with a lot of really incredible people and support. But it's a gift. You know, what you've lived and what you've done is going to give you that emphasis and impetus to keep going, and someone else's inspiration.
Yeah, you know, thank you for telling me how old you were, because now, now I can relate to you in a lot of ways, because we're basically, I'm 38, I'll be 39 next year. But what I think is interesting about this, our generation, is that we're in this weird gray zone, right? Like we understand the generation before us, and then now we kind of understand this new millennial generation, but we're not really in either one of those.
Exactly. We're in limbo.
Yeah. Yeah. But I feel that like the previous generations, and I've had this conversation a lot on this podcast, but I feel like the previous generations were kind of sold this lie, right? This idea that you get good grades in school, you go spend a lot of money in college, you go get a good job, yep, you work for X amount of years, and then you retire. And I think maybe we started to see,
don't know, probably like when we were in high school, you know, a lot of companies now getting rid of pensions and people's entire retirements being taken out from under them. Then they invested their entire lives there. Now that entire story that they've been told was like ripped out from under them. And now we've gotten to this point where, and especially me, as somebody who spent a lot of money on education, and I still spend a lot of money on education, and I'm not trying to downplay the importance of education in any regards, because I still do still invest in it. But I think that what I think is interesting is that we, both of us, definitely kind of were a little bit anarchist in the fact of going against that path. Like, nah, maybe that's not what we're supposed to do. Maybe that whole dream is now a lie and that whole path no longer exists.
I think if I can, you know, elaborate on that a little bit, I wouldn't say it was necessarily a lie, because it was true at that time. You know, it was
their, great point.
It was their truth. And we've evolved to realize that no, because I've also seen with, you know, my parents and my parents' friends and my friends' parents, what are you saving for? Right? Because what happens if you're stricken with a disease that you now all that money you save, you can't travel, right? You can't go anywhere. So living in the moment has become our thing, right? I feel like that's another part of this mid Gen X, Gen Y generation, right? I'm right in the middle. You and I are both right in that, like you said, a gray zone. And we can relate to the boomers because that's our parents. So, and I'm an only child. That's who I grew up with. So I can speak that language and I understand where they're coming from, but I push them to get out of that zone. And similarly with, you know, the millennials that I kind of overlap with, it's like, all right, guys, I hear what you're saying, but you need to look back and realize that, yeah, they weren't all correct. They've messed up. We get it. Hi, Reagan. Okay. Trickle down economics. Not a good plan. Understood. But don't discount all the wisdom that came before us too. Right. So it's taking what was done before and tweaking it and MacGyvering it. I used that reference the other week and they all looked at me like, who? Oh, that hurt. That hurt. Because I mean, Inspector Gadget's kind of a little bit of an airhead kind of guy. He doesn't like make things out of that situation. Who is that person today? Who is that relevant person? I'm like, well, I guess there's Kim Possible, but even still, some of these guys, these Gen Zers and things, are like, ooh, I'm like, oh, I have no reference for how to create something out of nothing. Ah! But really, that's kind of what we have to do is instill that, you know, innovative and like dynamic and keep going mentality and thread that together, because that's really how we're all going to exist. We're coexisting right now. How are we going to make this work? And I think it's us in this gray zone that are going to make that happen.
Yeah, it's you're right. I think I liked that note that you said that, like, you know, maybe it wasn't a lie because it was true for them. Mm-hmm. And I guess I've always kind of looked at it a little bit cynical in the fact that I think I watched, maybe not necessarily my family, because I grew up pretty poor. And so it wasn't like my family, like my parent, well, my mom actually, you know, she went back to school, while I was in like elementary and in high school. She was like working in the morning and going to college. But my dad was like a high school dropout. And so they had never really followed that path anyways. But I guess you had kind of seen this story play out. And then I guess because it was kind of a story that was still existing as I was going to school. And I think as I look back at it in retrospect, it's like that story doesn't play out really that well these days. And actually, I think I saw an interesting statistic that it was like people who did the best, generally, if you didn't start your own company and you weren't doing your own thing, if you were working for an employer, you were generally likely to progress in your career faster if you change jobs on average every 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
I didn't mean to cut you off.
Oh, but I was going to say, like, now think about that perspective from like somebody like myself that wants to have my own staff and really provide a great place to work. And it has been one of my kind of dreams. And that's a whole nother thing. But, you know, what impact does that now have on the independent business owner trying to fill this void of creating this, back to what you said, this idea of this work-life balance and kind of incorporating work although I think you were on the opposite spectrum, so maybe correct me if I'm wrong here, but this idea of providing a place that's more open to the idea that we aren't just numbers, right? And we're not just this industrial economy pulling levers sort of thing.
Absolutely. And I'm not against it. I just don't think it's a fair term to use. I think it's more of like a work-life flex, right? Because you have to, again, go back and forth. It's never going to be, you know, there's some days that I'm in my home office for only 4 hours. And that's fine. I mean, coming from like a 14-hour emergency shift, that was a like, oh God, I'm not doing enough. No. You get a lot more done in 2 hours than a normal person. It's okay. And normal, in quotes, normal is whatever you are. I'm not saying that, but I just tend to work on hyperdrive. I just think, you know, you just have to kind of strive for that. And the fact that you want to provide that is very different than the current setting, right? And especially corporate vet settings, or, you know, you have to meet this quota or things like that, or any corporate setting, not just veterinary. So I would, instead of saying work-life balance, just, you know, it's flex. You know, you have an appointment that you have to get to. Oh, some, you know, life happens, you know, okay, great. Make up the time later, you know, so you could work from 8 till noon and then log out for 4 hours when stuff's happening and come back on, you know, 4 to 8 or something like that. And it depends on which sector you're in. You know, that doesn't work when you've got patients in the hospital, but if you're doing IT, if you're doing content development, we can do that. Right. So it's definitely industry dependent, it's individual dependent. And I would like to think that if we have that shift in mentality to that flex, then you're going to have that shift again in a different paradigm for people to want to stay because it works for them. It's, you know, that's a word I'm using too much, but it's something that they can adapt to and incorporate with their lives. So it's, I think what the shift and why I've jumped a bit, I was at my last practice for 8 years, though, minus a 9-month segue when I had knee surgery and had to do something else for a while. And I would have stayed. But my brain was like, no, you've got to do more. So it really, I think, depends on the environment and the team that you're with. So don't give up on that dream, Clint.
Yeah.
I think you're gonna have that.
What I would love your insight in is that as I was listening to you talk about that, I was thinking about to a couple of different places that I had worked where, like when I was putting myself through school, I worked at a Honda dealership here in Golden, and
cars last forever.
Yeah. And I had, you know, I'd worked there for like 5 years. And when you're young, right, when you're 18, 19 years old, I mean, to be at a job for 5 years is crazy, right?
That's a long time. Yeah.
But what was interesting for me is it was like, working there, and this is no discredit to all of my friends that still are in that industry. And again, I don't mean this in any negative light towards them. This was just my personal persona, but having been there so long, and I'm like, okay, what's the next step? And I'm like, I don't want to do that. Like, I don't see fulfillment in that. Right. And then it was kind of the next thing. Right. And that's what has always driven me to make the change is I'm like, okay, well, what's the next thing? Right.
Yeah.
I worked for one of my first big software/DevOps jobs. I was working for a company called Nonprofit Technologies. It was based in West Palm Beach, Florida. And we were architecting kind of this cloud platform for financial accounting software. And I was there for 7 years, you know, and it was a great job, but interesting enough, I still had that same drive. Like I had started a couple coffee businesses on the side. I was doing other stuff. And so it was always like, okay, I don't see anything here that's going to allow me the growth and to do what I want to do. So let me try to open another door somewhere else.
Right. And that's, I think it's a particular mindset that not everyone has. Like you can be content in a space, but if you're still doing all these extra things to add to your fulfillment, then it's not necessarily maybe that life-sustaining space that you need to stay in. It's good for right now. It's like all those relationships that there's that poem or quote or something like, you know, there's friendships that last for a day or a week or a lifetime. And I think looking at your professional career is a relationship in that regard, right? So if you're constantly looking for that next thing until you find the thing that keeps your brain going, right? Because I feel like there's a commonality with you and I, like we've got it, the next thing, like there's something I've got to make this better. I've got to make it more. I've got to get out there and make a difference. Absolutely. I think we're in it. You know, we found our space where that's where it is. But before then it was like, I was doing all this. I was doing that. I was working here. I was doing a tutor, like, because I got to help. But here in this space with EVT, it's like, I can do this and this and this, and I can see it going and then expanding. Right. So, and I'm sure with Luca too, the same kind of thing, like this is where you start and then it goes and you see that ripple effect. That's what it is. You're eliciting change, but you're not having to change yourself to do so.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and what was interesting for me in starting this company is I realized, like, I do like technology and, you know, like I'm working on this new, building out this new product and platform. And, you know, like the other day I worked like 14 hours on it or something like that. So it's not to say that I don't like technology, because when I do get into it and I'm trying to solve these problems, I really do like it. But for me, what I realized is what really drives me is this, right? It's the people mm-hmm. that I interact with and the people that I get to talk with. And I love, to quote Martin, who founded, you know, Vet Success, he has this quote that's, you know, he says, like, I really love the business of doing business. Mm. And for me, I found that that's what, as my career has gone along, it's almost like I took my Ikigai, which is, I'm not sure if you're familiar with the Ikigai. It's like this 2000-year-old Japanese concept. Yeah. But, you know, I found something that I was good at, which was technology. And then I found the piece of that was really kind of what drove me and what gave back to the world. And I think in the act of doing business, it's about building relationships with people, mm-hmm. being there to support the other, you know, businesses. And in this case, the practices that I work with to help them be the best and really just kind of be a servant to them. And that's what drives me. It's not necessarily the technology, but it's this people interaction and this relationship building that really drives me. And I get there through the technology.
Yeah, I can absolutely see that. And I can relate to it on a different level. What really drives me is the relationship part of it as well. When I'm working with a student or a new grad or, you know, a coworker, like if I'm, you know, I'm that person that they need to call in, fantastic, but I may need to call them too. And for me, it's making sure everyone knows how awesome they are. You know, that's my catchphrase. Like, you're not just anything. You're not just an IT guy, right? Own that awesome that you are. And to be that mirror for people and those aha moments when they're like, they don't just get the skill or the clinical work that we're training, but the coaching mentality of it, the belief that they finally get that they can do this, that they're capable, is just the best. So and of course, I love the medical part of it. Honestly, I would have loved to have been in the human sector, but people just, that reaction, like my poor kids, if they scrape their knees, I'm like, just give me a second. Ugh, okay, I'm good. I got to do a couple of deep breaths and I'm fine. I have a hard time with that. So that's really, I love animals. I always had pets growing up, but I'm not that stereotypical person in veterinary medicine that's like, I love animals. I have to save them all. I'm like, I do want to save them, but I want to see how they work and how this is applicable in the bigger picture. And oh my gosh, if we can translate this surgical technique to humans. Oh, you already did that. Okay, cool. But it's that type of that constant learning and growth and development within the field and then with each other. Oh, I love it. Because, you know, we get into it for the animals, yes, but they all come with owners. And, you know, the animals aren't doing the procedures. We have to, right? So we have to interact with each other. So people's skills are so important. So to develop those team relationships. So I don't have a coworker. I have a teammate is very different. And that's what I love, is to build that team mentality and have those aha moments. Make sure everyone knows how awesome they are.
Yeah, which I think is a great segue and kind of back to what we were talking about earlier in this idea of this failed dream or this state. Because before it was, I think the other part of me is early in my career, I've also worked at, you know, places where it was like, you're just a number, you know, you're just a number, you're just a number on a spreadsheet. And I've seen now that there's a big shift in the way businesses are structured and really trying to, and now it's all about culture. And, you know, we saw in the, especially in the tech space, companies like bringing beer in and ping pong table, you know what I mean? Like trying to create this, yeah, like all these, trying to bring in all these different things. And so we have seen a big shift in that idea of what it's like to be at work and to be this complex thing we call human.
Right. And I think it's so important, and, you know, even more so in taking it further, is to make sure that we are not the only voices at the table. You know, I'm really, really excited and proud to now be a part of my state veterinary board's committee of diversity, equity, and inclusivity. And I am probably one of the whitest people you'll meet, you know, blonde hair, pale skin. But I get that, you know, I'm sitting in a seat of privilege. Absolutely am. And I want my voice to be the quiet one. And, you know, the difference of being a mentor versus a sponsor, you know, so absolutely mentorship is important, but sponsorship is equally so, because you're the voice for them when they're not in the room. And making sure that everyone's voices are heard, the LGBTQ plus community. I want my Black and Brown friends and my Indigenous people to be at the forefront, because they should be. They always should have been. And all of a sudden, here we are. Look at us. We're glowing in the light. We're so, you know, important. No, we're part of the equation. Yes, but we really need to make that the new founding block, you know, like getting this up there and getting this part of the conversation and knowing when to speak up and when to shut up and when to stand up and when to sit down. And I think that's the next real big push that I want to see. And I want to be a part of that change, is making sure that, you know, there is more equality, not just in writing, but in action.
Yeah, that's actually an interesting paradigm in the technology space right now, is that there's just not a lot of outside of white people or European descent, mm-hmm. people of European descent or Asians, you know, including really pretty much most of the East, you know, Japan, China, Korea, even the Philippines. It seems that those cultures drive a lot of people who want to get into technology.
Mm-hmm. And India,
but
too.
We don't. What's that?
India too.
Yeah, in India, yeah, definitely in India as well. But there isn't a large. The conversation that's been going on in the tech space is there doesn't seem to be a lot of interest from maybe the Hispanic or Black community in getting into technology. Not to say that there isn't, but it's under. For me, it's this interesting paradigm where I think, yeah, it would be great to get more people involved in all aspects of life. Mm-hmm. But on the same regard, it's like, I don't want to like force people into it either.
Oh, no.
You know, like we have to be more diverse. We have to force you into this. So it's like,
yeah, I don't want that. I may have missed.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying it's an interesting thing that I've been thinking about. So I wasn't saying that I wasn't trying to cast that on you. It's just something I've been kind of struggling with.
It's a tough conversation, right? Because yeah. We're sitting here in that seat, right? Of yeah. just having, you know, even if we weren't from a fiscally strong standpoint, we had the other advantage, right? So I think I don't want to force people into it. I want to show them that they have that. They have that right to be there. And I want them in that voice. If they love it, then do it. You know, to have the journeys that we've had, you know, to be in a punk rock band and to be a lawyer and an IT expert, you know, wow, you can, you know, but you can't do what you can't see.
Yeah.
And I think that's really where I'm coming from, is making sure that, hey, I want them heard, seen. Yes, do this. You can absolutely do this. And I'm going to sit down and let you do it. Go on. You know?
Yeah,
and that's really where I'm coming from with that, is I just want to make sure that we are having the right conversations in the right tone of voice and opening up the spaces, not only on the outside of where we are, but within ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, for me, it was always like, I don't want to like compound the problem by being like, okay, now you people have to be over here.
Right.
And you're right. Because we don't look like we're doing enough. And I think it's,
yeah, that's not what that would be. I think it's just making sure that it's accessible and not just dreamable, but doable.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So and again, it comes back to this idea that people are very, very complicated and
aren't we?
Yeah. And for me, it's tough because like, I'm always a very, this is a really, especially with the conversation we're having now, this is a really bad example, but you know, it's like very black or white, you know, I'm like, okay, how, where's the line, you know? And then, okay, how, and then how do we correct the problem? So what's the underlying problem? Okay, let's fix that and let's move on. Mm-hmm. But because it deals with people, there are a million, it's irreducibly complex, right? You can't reduce it down to a simple solution, and it requires a lot more thought.
I think right there, you said it though. It requires thought and being mindful about it. So it's having these types of conversations, making sure they're mindful and they're compassionate and they're authentic, because people can tell when you're just BSing them. Some can't, especially if you're really good at it. If you have a bachelor's in science, then you're good at it, right? We have a BS for a reason. But we should just make sure that we bring that mindful conversation to the forefront.
Yeah. And again, I'm not, and for everybody listening, I'm not trying to discredit all the people in the Hispanic. The thing, I'm not trying to discredit, like, I've worked with plenty of Hispanic or people from the African American community in technology. But I think we in the technology community are trying to understand the problem as to why more people in those communities aren't interested in how, where that is. And so I think it just presents an issue.
A part of the solution and stop being a continuation of the problem is really what it comes down to.
Yeah. So segue from there. The topic that is 2020
conversation. We lifted it. We did good.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Exactly. You know, one thing that I am, I would love, and this is totally up to you, but if you want to elaborate on this, but you mentioned that your father was a minister. I didn't grow up in a faith or religious based household. I think I would say we were pretty agnostic. But what was interesting for me is I've had a very kind of crazy spiritual life. A bit of a crazy spiritual journey. And so I've been the more time I have put thought into a lot of some of these older concepts, the more I just get really fascinated with it. So what was it like for you, having a father that was a minister, and, you know, what kind of impact did that have on your life?
How much time do we have, Clint? I don't mean that in a negative sense. Honestly, my dad is one in a million, not just because he's my dad, but he's always been a very open-minded and inclusive person, always. I mean, classic example, if you follow any of the news beyond what has been in the forefront this past year, but in 2018-19, his denomination of United Methodism split based on the LGBTQ community. There was the side that was for acceptance and love and compassion, and then there was the side that was like, nope, they can't come in. My dad stole that lovely, like, kind of ribbon, for lack of a better description, that they wear outside of their robes, that he got at ordination. White, gold embossed, beautiful. Went up to the front, as he did in the at the top of his service, right at the chancel there, and cut it in two and put a rainbow one instead in its place, that my mom's best friend had made out of silk print. It's gorgeous. And he said, this is where I stand. You can stay and be a part of this or not. And he encouraged that from a very young age of, yes, I preach from and read the Bible, but it's not black and white. There's stories to learn from, but to not take as absolutes, because they were written by men, and our people by our nature, as we've discussed, fallible, right? Complex. So 7 days in his mind with God is not the same time as human time. So evolution, absolutely. You know, they don't have to be at war with one another. They can work side by side. Other religions, they were here before we were. Why are they wrong? Jesus was a Jew, right? So let's incorporate native prayers into our services. Let's talk about, hey, my daughter did an around the world trip and went to Japan and China and India and all these other incredible countries. What did you learn? Teach us about Shinto. What can Buddha teach us? you walked in Mahatma Gandhi's footsteps. What does that mean? You know, so it was him as a dad was incredible, very open-minded, ecumenical, and just really supportive in all of those. It was, unfortunately, the good Christian communities, right? So, and there's those memes that go around, you know, you know, the guy in the tattoos is actually one of the best people you ever meet. And that sweet little old lady is the most judgmental, right? And that happened a lot. My mom and I bore the brunt of that a lot. And it was really hard. And I just left the church. I was done. I'm not going back. And honestly, I feel more in tune with any type of spiritual sense when I'm in nature, you know, or I was a swimmer. All of my swim meets were on Sundays. So sorry. And my dad was never to judge about that. And he instilled that into me. You don't judge people. You get to know them. So was it challenging? Absolutely. But I mean, my mom was a psychologist. So which one was harder? So you have the spiritual advisor and the one that's trying to analyze what you're doing. She did not. She was incredible. I'm very fortunate to have both open-minded, supportive, compassionate, really cool people that didn't just give birth to me, but they helped me become who I am. But, you know, I struggle with that too. And he and I will have debates to this day, even though he's retired, about like, okay, Christianity. He's like, yeah, they get it wrong. Right. And if you look at the common thread through the majority of the world's religions, what are the two tenets? Love and respect, kindness. So just do that. And that's our religion, my family, you know, kindness and respect. That's it. You keep it that simple and it's okay. You know, read about the Torah, you know, read about Shintoism and read about Zen Buddhism and different kinds, Taoism, you know, Hinduism. Wow, it's fascinating, right? The Quran, we don't understand it, right? And honestly, the interpretations, things get lost. King James, when it got turned to English, wow, right? We lost a lot. So who are we to put labels on people? We shouldn't. So I'm not a religious person. I never really was. And my mom wasn't either. Faithful, yes. Spiritual, absolutely. There's bigger things out there than just us humans. That's silly to think we're all that there is. But really what it comes down to, again, is kindness and respect.
Yeah, it's interesting. Because I have like, I think what is interesting about your story is like you came, it's like you kind of grew up in this household, but you kind of took a different departure. And as people, you know, this is the one podcast where I feel it's okay for us to talk about religion, politics, and all these tough conversations.
Oh, yeah,
because I think it's really important to have these tough conversations, right? And I'm really afraid that and this is a complete tangent, but I think it's important to say, is that I feel that we have lost the ability to have conversations about some of life's most important things you could talk about, right?
I would absolutely.
The people that are going to govern you and the answer to life's questions. And right. And it's like now we're no longer allowed to talk about politics or we're not allowed to talk about religion. And I understand. I mean, I understand where that concept comes from. Right. One thing that I love about Orthodox Jews is that they talk about this idea that, you know, the scriptures aren't a rule book to follow, but it's a problem to be solved. And so they come in and they argue about different topics, but when they leave, they're still a community and they're, you know, they may have just yelled face to face at each other about something, but they know, but there's this understanding that, well, when we walk out the door, we're going to still be a community, right?
And that's the best part. Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So that's why I always think it's interesting. And I know it's like a hard thing and a lot of people don't want to talk about, but I kind of have taken a different route and I've gotten far more involved in the Judeo-Christian theology and mindset than I ever imagined. And what I think is interesting is like for me, and I spent 5 years five or 6 years studying in a Buddhist monastery. Like I went through the teacher training program.
Oh my gosh.
My wife and I had a traditional Buddhist wedding in Thailand. So it was like, I was pretty ingrained in that whole thought process.
That's, and see right there, that is fantastic. And I want to go back to what you said about these difficult conversations, because I wholeheartedly agree. When you lose the ability to debate and disagree, where can you find the, you know, the concord, If there's no Discord, you can't come back. And how do you learn and grow? You can't. Now, don't get me wrong. I rebelled for sure. I mean, all of my piercings have since healed, but you know, there's two types of PKs, the good ones and me. But it was, you know, if your parents recognize that, like, or anyone that's in it, it's like, all right, well, if we make it too strict, if we do the whole footloose thing, that's not okay. Right. So you have to, you know, have boundaries and rules for sure. But it shouldn't be based on a 2000-year-old book written by people that we didn't know, right? And I joke with my dad all the time, and you know, sorry if we offend anybody, but not sorry. I'm like, so how does it feel to have worked for the most successful fairy tale of all time? Because really, if you have that comparison, how is this any different to Bullfinch's mythology?
To what's that?
Like a mythology book, like the Bullfinch, like the author that compiled all the Greek mythologies and Roman mythologies and put them in this gorgeous volume. What's the difference? It's how I was raised, and I agree with the utmost principles. It's the dogma and the indoctrination and the we're right, everyone else is wrong. Really?
Yeah.
Jesus would have done that. Sure, he would be sitting outside and making sure all the homeless people had places to go and food to eat. And I'm also fairly certain that he didn't have blonde hair and blue eyes, so he'd be.
This is also true.
Right, yes. He'd be led in this country. Yeah. So he was the champion of the underdog. That's who Jesus was supposed to have been. So how did it get so skewed?
Yeah.
We messed it up.
And you know what is interesting about, because you were talking about this idea that, you know, sometimes the person with like the tattoos and the piercings really nice, and then you have this other, like, you know, 70-year-old little lady who's like going to be the harshest person you ever met, right? Who seems so unassuming. But what I think is interesting about that, and to speak about my journey personally, is that I'm probably going to lose a million followers for saying this, but I think the Bible is one of the most fascinating books on the planet. And what is interesting is I see, but the thing is like, and again, to call myself out here, is I would never openly say like, hey, I'm a Christian or something like that. And mostly because, again, like I have so many, there are so many people that I absolutely adore and think are amazing that are part of the LGBT community. Like mm-hmm. I love Pride VMC and all these other different groups.
Yeah.
And if I was to say that, I would immediately then be labeled as somebody who maybe is anti that, right? Like anti-LGBTQ.
Denomination, right? And that's the tricky part and the sticky part with Christianity is it's not just one, right? Yeah. You do have like the two different sides of the coin with Catholicism and Protestants, but within the Protestant sector, there's thousands.
Yeah.
I mean, Clint, you can make a church today.
Yeah, exactly.
And
follow
whatever. And I mean, that's the beauty of the nation that we live in for religious freedom, except when we don't allow it to be had.
Yeah.
And I agree with you that the Bible is absolutely fascinating. How many books do you read that have a chapter or a different book of the Bible that says one thing and then two further down totally contradicts it, right? In the same volume.
Yeah, 66 books by 44 different authors over, you know, thousands of years.
My goodness. There's so many people like, well, you should know how to quote this and know what all the books are. Your father's a minister. Yeah. I'm like, yeah, he works for God. I didn't even know that anymore. But I recite the majority of the Apostles' Creed and all of that by heart. Absolutely, because I memorize things. That's who I am. But for me, it's, you know, yes, take it with a whole salt shaker of salt. Yeah, not the pillar that you may have turned into for looking backwards. But you can't just base, for me, I can't base my life off of one tenet, one book, because life doesn't, you know, how many books did you read in school, right? How many courses did you take? Did you base your entire education off of one? Right? If I had studied cell biology and then gone into my physics class, not having read that textbook, how would I have done on my final? Well, I mean, I didn't do great anyway, but that's my point, right? Your life doesn't come with just one instruction manual. If it did, parenting would be a lot easier. And you learn more so from this, these conversations.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. And I think that's what's really important. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think to circle it back again, because this is the people of veterinary medicine, not the theology podcast, but I could talk theology all day just because I love it. I love to nerd out on that stuff. But I'm really afraid. And even now it seems like it really seem again, now to tie in the other most controversial topic on the planet, politics, it seems like now we are more divided than ever. There's no, you know, gray area. It's either this, you're either this, you're on this side or you're on that side. And we can't have these conversations. And hopefully I'm making a small impact by, you know, having and opening the door to some tougher conversations with other people one day at a time and saying, you know, and again, Josh, you made it into another episode. So Josh, if you're listening, but you know, Josh and I, that is the thing that I love about Josh the most is that he and I may disagree on a number of different topics. Mm-hmm. But the thing is like, we can sit down and we can talk about it. But at the end of the day, like it was just hashing out ideas, right? It was just, it's not about who's wrong or right. It's about expressing opinions, maybe potentially changing your opinions. Like I'm open to changing, you know, I hold very strong ideas, but I hold them very loosely, right? So it's like, or I hold very strong opinions, but I hold them very loosely. So if you can present me some facts that can change my opinion, then I'm open to change. But until that point, I'm going to, you know, I hold on to my opinions, but I think I would love to see a place, where we can get back to, and again, to kind of throw myself under the bus here, like especially in the culture now, it's like, if I were to go to like an Antifa rally or something like that, and I was to be like, yeah, I'm a total Bible nerd. Like I love it. Right. Like I probably wouldn't be welcome into the group, but not necessarily because I'm like, hey, it's not that I'm not standing up for the Black Lives Matter movement or some of these other issues that we're facing. This is just something I'm really into, and I'm a very complex person, right? And we've lost this concept of complex people.
And I think that's an important point to make, right? That it goes back to the one thing doesn't define you. But where I come from and on my stance on these things is, yes, it's very polarizing. I want to be able to have these conversations and I have very strong opinions, but they're backed up also by fact, you know, in research and thought. You know, they're not just blah, thrown out there and just deal with it. And I think what has made it so polarizing is I'm not saying, it's so hard, right, to actually say this appropriately, but I can't condone racism. I can't. And exclusivity and any type of anti-LGBTQ legislation. I can't. And I'm sorry, you as the government don't get to tell me what to do with my body. That's not okay. And those types of things, when people are so gung-ho about a person in power that is against all of that stuff, you know, or for it, whatever the case may be, that's really hard to let go of. And I think that's where we're at right now, is that people are just so frenzied. I'm, you know, honestly, if you get me fired up about a particular issue, I will get there. My poor niece was the brunt of my ire somewhere. And she's like, well, COVID's a hoax. I was like, what? Yeah. I did not even take a second and try to think of where she was coming from. And that was on me. So I think that's also, you know, as trying to have those conversations, like if we are not tolerant and patient, how can anyone else learn to be? And that is hard. That is really hard when there's so many of these things that the other, right, are intolerant of. Well, I'm intolerant of your intolerance. How does that help?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yes.
So we have to take that stance. And that is why, to get, you know, back to, hey, we're vet med, right? I love this profession, not just because of the medicine and the animals in it, but the people in it. It is not one size fits all. It's for everyone. Because who doesn't get, I mean, I question you if you see a puppy and don't go, oh,
yeah, know? Exactly. There was one vet that I said, that I talked to, they were like, you know, like if you just don't like dogs, like there's something wrong with you. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, you're just a weird person.
Now, disclaimer, I am a cat person. Gun, you can all hate on me. That's fine. Yeah. I love them. mostly because I can relate to just leave me alone or I'll cut you.
Exactly. Yeah.
Having that day.
Yeah.
And dogs like, I'm happy all the time. I'm like, I'm
yeah.
not. I'm sorry. But I love them. I love their just unbridled joy. And oh my gosh, like my dog has a nubbin and, you know, she just wiggles so hard. She has no tail. So her whole body goes and it's go ahead and not smile. You know, I don't
exactly,
care.
Yeah.
All right. You destroyed the couch cushion again, but look at you. You're so happy to see me. I love you. You know?
Yeah.
But then you have my cat that's like, all right, pet me for 2 seconds. Stop. So it's that balance, but exactly. You know, I trust my dog, like, and honestly, my kids are great like that too. If they won't go near you, then I'm not sure you're a kind of safe. I mean, my daughter has always been good like that. She's like, if she hangs back and she is me, like talks, will hug any, like she's just super exuberant. And if she's like holding back, I will just look at the room like, oh, okay. And I think we've lost that too, because we're ignoring our internal barometers and the cues that we're given, right? We're just, we got to pay attention.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, to kind of circle back to where we were, and as we kind of come down the last few minutes here, what I think is interesting is I mean, there's no denying that there are some people in the world who are just flat out evil, right? I mean, there's no denying that fact, but what I would love to see is I would love to get to a position where we, like, you know, maybe like if I sat down with somebody who's like to use myself as an example, like a hardcore atheist, somebody who is really everything's just a random concoction of chemicals, right? I would love to be able to sit down with them to where we look at each other as good people with bad ideas rather than bad people with bad ideas, right?
Ooh, I like that.
And if we can understand that the person sitting across from us, even though they have different ideas at their core, they're good people just like us. And we're just trying to solve this problem that is life.
I
think
it
opens.
I really do. I don't want to believe that these are all a bunch of bad people. I don't. That breaks my heart on multiple levels.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, I actually think like most people, I don't know. I want to believe politically that most people are kind of more like libertarian, like myself, and that, you know, it's like, I want married gay couples to be able to defend their property and their marijuana plants with their guns, you know? So it's like, I'm kind of like very middle of the road, like, individual liberty. And I think a lot of Western people feel that way, and it's just so unfortunate. And I think I'm actually working on a piece right now, you know, what is big tech and mean, you know, what does that look like under a Biden administration, and where have we gone, and are there going to be any changes? And I think one aspect of it that is kind of that I think is interesting is that we've seen the impact that social media has on people, the climate, and the things that people are talking about. And while I think there's a lot of benefits to social media, I think we're starting to really see the negative side effect. I'm personally afraid that we get to a point where I saw a study that was like over half, I think it was like 55% of Americans as of 2019 was the data, get their news from social media, right? And I'm afraid we're going to get to a point where we have created our own version of the Chinese firewall, in the fact that I think it was in 2016, it was illegal for the United States government to essentially perform psyops, as they called, or psychological operations like we do in other countries, you know, like the whole pamphleting thing and trying to get the communities to kind of be like pro-America or pro whoever we want in power there. It was illegal until it was like 2014 or 2016 when the government now was allowed to do that to American citizens. And so I get worried that with the power that we see with big tech, right, with Microsoft, Google, and Facebook, that we're going to have our own kind of Chinese version of the firewall, the Chinese firewall, where they're really kind of just pushing us the stories they want us to hear. And again, that's my own opinion. I don't know. I don't work behind the scenes. It's just being in tech and what I see. Those are some of the things I'm afraid of. And you start to see this divide, especially in politics today. And again, this idea that it really becomes, because we're weaker when we're divided, right? If we're not, we're stronger when we're together. And so if we look at people as bad people with bad ideas, it's easier to keep us segregated. Again, these are all my opinions, right? But
no, but they're valid. And that doesn't, just because they're yours doesn't make them, it doesn't invalidate them. You know, just because I might not agree with them doesn't make them any less real. It really, to kind of tie that into vet med, it's like, they're not bad dogs. They're not. I mean, their behavior is bad. I own a bad behaved dog sometimes. But, you know, so am I. Like, I have bad habits. But if we take a second, where is this coming from? Are they really aggressive? Or are they just scared to death? You know, like, who likes to go to the doctor? Not me, right? So it's really, and that's what I found too in recent research, that there's Dr. Marty Becker, Fear Free, right? And then you have Dr. Carlos Siracusa at Penn with Calm. If you understand the neuroscience and the behaviors of these animals, then you can understand where they're coming from and approach it differently. How is that any different? And then having a conversation with a human being. If you practice active listening, like really hearing what you're saying so that I can repeat it back to you, and then reading your body language, like you're like, we're both like in front of each other on the screen. Like we're in this conversation. Like I can tell that, like we're not just, we're engaged, right? And same kind of thing when you're working in a clinic and you can look at their eye position, their ear position, their body stance. Yeah, that cat's hissing at you. Why? What are you trying to do to it? So it's really taking that mindfulness, that active listening, and that understanding that we give to our patients. Do it for each other.
Exactly, yeah.
It's so simple and yet so hard to do. And I know I took that off of, you know, the big tech conversation, but it is scary. I mean, The Handmaid's Tale, like it's a little bit concerning that it's such a popular series. Margaret Atwood. But I mean, really, and it's like when you do a Google search, my truth isn't necessarily the same as your truth.
Yeah.
It may be similar, but it's not. Our news feed is tailored already based upon our interests and who we are.
Oh yeah. I try to avoid, it's funny. I'm such a hypocrite. I'm like, I try to avoid
Aren't
Google.
We all?
Yeah. But I'm like, I was about to say, oh, I try to avoid Google. Like, you know, I try to avoid Google like the plague, but in the same breath, like I'm completely embedded in the G Suite camp, which is owned by Google. Right. So it's like, no, I really don't. But yeah. For using search, like I always use like all my default searches, DuckDuckGo. But what is interesting is like, it is interesting to search for something. Like I also love photography, so I'm always like geeking out on photography.
My minor in college.
Yeah, so I'm always like geeking out on camera gear. But it's interesting, to give an example, like Sony is supposed to come out with a new RX100 Mark 8, I think, is supposed to come out. And so I've been kind of trying to stay up to date, like, ooh, when is this thing going to come out? And if I search on DuckDuckGo and then I search on Google, I get completely different results, right? And it's just interesting to compare those and kind of see how that whole thing works, and how, again, this idea of big tech kind of controlling the conversation is really interesting. There's a whole lot of things in there.
Yeah, and then you've got, I mean, I'm also super, as my friends lovingly, I hope it's lovingly, refer to me as being crunchy, right? Like so anti-plastic and composting. And all
that. Yeah, yeah, right.
So it's, I'm always like, so, hey, have you tried this? You know, because look at all that. Like you walk in the grocery store aisle, how many different types of peanut butter do I need? I can't decide. Yogurt? Come on now. You know, it's for me, it's very different because I can't have peanut butter and I'm lactose intolerant. So that's okay. Oat milk it is. But thankfully we have all those choices, right? But if we could just, you know, have these conversations, like, look, all this plastic stuff, guys, like it's really, you just gradually shift it out. It's easy to do, you know, honestly. I mean, granted, you and I don't have that a lot of hair. Those of you that don't know me, I have very short hair. So bar shampoo works. It might not work for everyone, but there's other options, you know? And so it's, again, like bringing that conversation to the table too, of like, hey, DuckDuckGo. I use Ecosia because every time I search, it plants a tree.
Oh, that's cool. I didn't know that. What's it called?
Ecosia, E-C-O-S-I-A. And there's another one for Ocean Conservancy that they take out a pound of plastic for every search. There's everything. And it goes back to like in the beginning of our conversation or in the middle, we've all talked about it, like our impact, just a little bit, you know, just that, honestly, just throw one pebble. Look what it does.
Yeah.
It spreads. So never think for a second, any of you listening, or even us having this conversation, Clint, every little thing you do, positive or negative, is going to move outwards. So just keeping that in mind as you put one step in front of the other, drag yourself out of bed in the morning. Yesterday was particularly hard. that you are going to make a difference. You, each of us, you know, we all matter. So choose that, you know, choose wisely.
So a question then, are you vegetarian?
I am.
Oh, okay. Awesome. Well, you're lactose intolerant, so you must be vegan then.
Pretty much.
Yeah. Okay. So, what's interesting is like, I also, I would say I'm more vegetarian. For a long time I cut dairy completely out, but, sometimes it's just easier on my life to sometimes incorporate cheese, especially if other people are cooking or whatever. So, the only animal product I eat occasionally is cheese.
My poor friends are like, so what should we make for you? I'm like, I'll bring my own.
Yeah, exactly. Own. Yeah, exactly.
Or we host. Right now that's not a problem because no one's going anywhere. Yeah. But yeah, it's where's your impact, right? And
right.
I'm not going to be that militant vegan that's like, you have to, but I'm going to have a conversation with you to consider it.
Yeah.
You know, look at what all the, and this is really funny. My father-in-law is a cattle rancher / wheat farmer in Kansas. And his daughter-in-law is gluten-free and a vegetarian.
Yeah.
Like, what? Yeah. I was like, well, yeah, Frank, I'm here. You know, I've been here for 17 years. I'm not going anywhere. So love me. And he does. Because, I mean, that's his livelihood. And, you know, he does it in a responsible way. We got him to recycle like 10 years ago. It was awesome. And he goes strong. Like, he's open-minded. But it's to, again, incorporate that mindfulness, really that common thread that we keep coming back to of kindness and respect. Just do it.
Yeah. I'm actually surprised that there aren't more, at least vegetarians in the vet space. You would think with the,
there's a lot of us.
Is there? Yeah. Okay. Cause I always like ask and you know, and they're always like, no, I'm like, I don't know. I was just finding the best.
I mean, honestly, to be, you know, full transparency, it's only been 3 years since I've been a full vegetarian. I've gone back and forth. We were always very plant-based, plant heavy. I haven't had red meat in, I don't even know how long. And so it wasn't a hard transition. And it was honestly my manager at the last practice was just like, just do it. Okay.
Oh, that's cool. Right. Yeah.
And honestly, it was a health thing too. My doctor was like, so give up meat or give up wine? I'm like, well, I have two small humans and I work full time. So
yeah.
I'm not an alcoholic. I do enjoy a glass of Pinot now and again, but and then I've cut that out a lot too. And it's just, is it health-based? Yes. But is it morally and ethically for me? Yeah. You know, I'm working to say, and it had been a thorn in my brain for a long time. Like, you're trying to save these guys. Why are you eating them? Like, I don't know. They taste good. They don't act good. Now, but now the thought of it, it's like, oh, and I had a piece of, like, we were at a barbecue months before. And I accidentally, like, the salad I had a piece of rib on it. I was like, ugh. Oh, really? I love ribs. I used to.
Yeah.
The thought of it is just no. And, you know, my kids and my son's 8, and don't ever tell him you eat pig. He will be like offended because he loves pigs. Like, pigs and elephants are his favorite animals. And he's like, why would you eat them? They're adorable. I'm like, well, honey. And it's that conversation, like, we don't choose to, but that doesn't mean we have to, you know, enforce our choices on others. That's not how this works. He's like, I know, but it's just, it's gross. It's wrong. I was like, that's how you believe. And I'm not trying to tell you you're wrong because you are really passionate about that. And that's great. But you don't need to make someone else believe the way you do. He's like, oh, that's right. I was like, okay, good. We got that lesson.
Well, that's an amazing segue because I think that, you know, I had a former boss of mine, like whenever we are interviewing people, he'd always be I don't know how it would come up, but a lot of times he'd be like, oh, well, Clint's vegan. And I would always be like, no, don't say that word. Cause you said it earlier, right? Like, I'm not the militant vegan. And I didn't want to get labeled as that. And for me, I had my own journey as to going plant-based and what that meant for me.
Right.
It was about training for this big bike race and I felt better. And
I do. And then you have my friends, you know, one of my best friends too. I say that word a lot, but I do. I have a lot of really close friends because, you know, being an only kid, my friends are my family. And she was a vegetarian since she was a kid. So she never knew anything different, you know? And so she's like, you feel better? You feel different? And I was like, yes. and there's nothing wrong with that. If you feel that passionately about veganism, then champion it. Yes. You know, it's like, I feel that passionate about education and empowerment. I champion it, but there's a way to do it too. That's not a, you know, like you have to, otherwise you're wrong.
Yeah, exactly.
And,
yeah.
And I've met people like that on all aspects, you know, walks of life, not just about their dietary or their lifestyle. That's, you know,
yeah.
Believe that way. Great. But don't unfriend someone just because they have a leather boot, you know?
Yeah. I think, you know, I think this has really been kind of an eye-opening experience for me. It's like, there's so many aspects of my life that I try to keep private, you know, like I'm a total theology nerd and, I know. And I'm mostly, you know, 90% vegan, like 10% yeah, vegetarian.
Me too. But there's these. There are some, and I don't think you mentioned it earlier, like you're going to lose followers over that. I don't think you will, because people that are here in this space are here for a reason, and they have learned your voice, and that's one, you're real. And so now they're getting to see more of you. And I think this is fabulous. I've been looking forward to it. And now I'm like, this is great. Can we talk more often? Like,
yeah. Because, well, thank you. Yeah. I didn't scare you away.
No, yeah. God. Yeah. It took me. But these, like you said earlier, like we need to not, you know, we took away civility and we called it political correctness and then made fun of it.
Yeah.
Okay, but happy meeting.
That's a great saying. Actually, I've never heard that. I'm gonna have to use that one.
I can't own that. I saw that on my friend Margaret's Facebook feed. So it's not mine, but it resonates, right? Because we made fun of being politically correct. Why is it? Because we took civility and gave it a different name.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, people are crazy. This is why I'm in vet med. I love animals. Yeah, yeah.
But what I think I realize is I have like my own construct where like I don't want people to make assumptions about me, right? And I'm like, rather than just being honest with who I am and the things that I'm interested in and then letting people make their own judgments, I'm like, well, I don't want you to call me this because in that I'm assuming that you're assuming, you know, and right. It's just like, yeah.
And what does assuming do? It makes a what out of what? So
exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
We're all guilty of it. Absolutely. Yeah. But, and I think that we honestly, here's one of my geeky things. Calvin and Hobbes, love them. Love them as a kid, but oh my gosh, reread them as an adult. Bill Watterson knew what was up. So there's this whole, and I love him because he goes through all these, like you don't have just the color ones that are the standalone, but like the theme that goes through like the whole book. And there's this one with Hobbes being like, what is it with you humans that you have to name everything? And I sat there like, yeah, we have to label everything. Everything has to have a title or a name or in our world, an acronym.
Huh. Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Huh. And that kind of, that fits right there with what you just said. Like, I don't want to be labeled. You shouldn't be. You're Clint. And that's
Yeah. Well, hopefully anyways, right? Again,
you
here's my own internal insecurities coming out.
I know. You're not. Yeah, but that's who you are. Again, what you do and one aspect of you does not define you. You know, yes, I'm married and I have kids, but being a wife and a mother is not who I am. It's a part of me. Absolutely. Yeah. But I'm a singer and I'm a poet and I'm an innovator and I'm a vet tech and I'm a daughter and I'm a, you know, and I'm a little crazy and that's okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we label ourselves too. And we maybe shouldn't.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, this has been amazing. And I feel like we could keep going for at least another hour, but I've already gone over here and
sorry.
I don't want to take it. No, it's okay. I hope I didn't take up too. I hope you had time and I didn't interrupt you.
I blocked it off just because I know how verbose I am and I have a feeling it might happen. So yeah. It's been an honor and I'm really grateful to get to spend time with you today. Thank you.
Well, I'm really glad that, you know, me bringing up the no topics didn't scare you away. We still had a good conversation.
Oh gosh. No, they're yes. Not no.
Yeah, that's right. So with the last 2 minutes that we have here, I always like to give, you know, it's shameless self-promotion time. You know, how can people find out more about you? Where can they learn about,
Our website is our name, empoweringveterinaryteams.com. We're on Insta and Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn. Honestly, we talked about don't Google, but hey, you can find us.
Yeah. I mean, Google has its place, right? As a coffee snob, like everybody's like, you must hate Starbucks. And I'm like, no, it has its place, right? It all has its place.
Yeah, because I mean, it's got mermaids. I love mermaids.
Yeah, the green mermaid. Yeah.
And exactly. Seattle is a good place. But Absolutely find us and just know that we are always looking to have you be a part of the EV team.
Awesome. What's the website again? Empowervet.com?
Empoweringveterinaryteams.com.
Oh, empoweringveterinaryteams.com. Awesome. Yeah. Well, thank you again. It really was a pleasure, and it was so great getting to know you and to chat with you and talk about some very tough topics that we're facing in 2020. And hopefully conversations like this, you know, one by one, we can slowly make a change.
Yep. We're going to be that pebble in the pond for sure.
That's right. Exactly. Yes. Very much so. Thanks. Well, thank you again, Lissa. It was a pleasure.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.